All right. Welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin. And joining me this week, Dom is gone, but fear not. We have with us number one Texas Tech superfan, Kirsten McInnes. Kirsten, how are you?
Obviously, I'm devastated that they just lost, but I'll get through this.
Yeah, condolences in these trying times. It was a great run, but ultimately could not find the championship. But still a lot to be proud of this season, and I'm sure you're very much looking forward to what next year has in store.
Oh, yeah, I definitely know a lot about this team and how things are going. You know, last week when you were giving Dom trouble for not putting effort into his bracket, I really felt like you were also coming for me just through the podcast, and I don't think there's anything wrong with flipping a coin that many times in a row to come up with a bracket.
I'm not even kidding that when I was giving Dom a hard time for it, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh man, Kirsten's going to feel bad about this too.
I felt attacked.
Kirsten, for anyone unaware, for her March Madness bracket, flipped a coin 63 times to determine each of the matchups, and the coin miraculously ended up with Texas Tech winning the championship. And moments ago, at the time of this recording, they just lost the championship game in overtime. So it was almost a miracle run, but still pretty impressive nonetheless.
I just think that the fact that I had anything going this far is very impressive.
No, you did a really strong job, and I think you may have beaten Dom, although I'd have to look.
I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah, not that difficult this year. His randomizer didn't prove to be an effective strategy. Who could have seen that coming? But either way, Kirsten, enough basketball. Basketball season is over until the tournament starts again next March. we are here to talk about Survivor Edge of Extinction. Episode number, whatever it is, 8, I think we're on at this point.
Oh, I don't keep track of that.
Yeah, I, as someone who should be keeping track of it, have a very hard time doing so. But Kirsten, I want to start just by asking, what are your thoughts on the season to this point? Has it been, I'm guessing it was not a season based on hearing about the twist ahead of time that you had super high expectations for, but how has it been landing compared to what you were anticipating?
Yeah, so I had the bar was underground. I was not expecting a lot at all, but I have been, you know, pleasantly surprised. I'm still not loving it. I certainly am not a huge fan of the twist, and I don't think people should be publicly praising it as much as they have been.
Sorry.
Yeah, how dare you? But it's been, fine, and I feel like I'm not as invested in it, so it doesn't matter as much, so I'm going to be satisfied no matter what happens, but it's not the best, but it's not the worst. And I'm just glad that everyone is finally seeing Rick the way I've seen him this entire season.
Yeah. Not a strong week for Devins here, I would say, on the show and on, the public, social media kind of discord, happening about the show. But yeah, I'm kind of with you where I certainly had pretty low expectations, to say the least, just sight unseen because of the way the twist seemed like it was going to impact the game. But to this point, still, I would say my expectations have been very much exceeded. And I'm sorry, Kirsten, for spending so much time praising what I think has been a good job, I would say primarily by the editors this season, although I know that is a very contentious topic, depending on whom you ask. I have been overall quite happy with the Edge of Extinction, but I am feeling, I think, somewhat similarly to something you just referenced, which is because of how abnormal this kind of game design is compared to normal Survivor, I find myself, I guess, kind of more okay with things just going haywire and more advantages just being thrown into people's bags and being kind of fair game to me. And it made me realize that's essentially how I feel about the Challenge and Big Brother 2. And it's much easier to enjoy those shows when that is your state of mind. But I just don't know if I want that to be the case for me with Survivor. I want to think of Survivor as better than that.
Well, and that's the thing. This doesn't really feel like Survivor. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But are you liking the cast overall, kind of setting aside the season theme rearing its ugly head every so often? Is this a group of newbies and potentially returnees that you have been enjoying to this point?
Yeah, it hasn't been bad at all. In the preseason, I had a really hard time connecting with anyone. I only really liked Julie and Aurora coming into the season. I was like, okay, we're standing Julie and Aurora and Kelly Wentworth, and that's what we're going with. And so I was really glad to see Aurora have like a pretty cool episode this week. People have been loving Julie, so I feel like vindicated. Victoria's been incredible. Lauren is truly a warrior, as Jeff Probst said. But other than that, like, I feel like the female cast is a lot stronger than the male cast. And like, other than those few, like, I don't really connect with the cast as a whole as much as maybe I have in the past. So they're pretty good. They're better than I thought they would be. I love seeing new players just completely snow returning players, because that's not what you would normally expect in this kind of situation. So, you know, I feel like I'm very like middle of the road on everything.
Yeah, well, I think that is one of the main takeaways for me from the beginning portion of this season, is kind of what I would say is a pretty clear change of the kind of state of mixing returnees with new players, where every season historically, at least one of the returnees has made it to the finals, and pretty much every time one of the returnees ends up just kind of dominating that season and winning or losing in the finals. But this time around, and maybe it is specific to this group of newbies, but I would imagine it really does seem like a trend in modern casting is having a lot more super fans out there. And now that they're putting so many people on the island who themselves understand the history of returning players being mixed in with newbies, it may honestly be the case that the returning players who are drastically down in numbers in a group of primarily newbies, I think it's clearly the case that the days are over of them just being able to have a stranglehold on the game the entire time. And it may be the past the like tipping point of they have a disadvantage. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that they probably cast this season with that in mind, where they wanted it to be very different from other seasons with, you know, just a couple of returnees. And that's something that Survivor does really, really well, is having all these people who really know the game. They know more than just the basic strategy. Like, big Survivor fans are spending so much time every single week really going into the game, thinking about every little thing and thinking, you know, what would they do in these situations? And I think that that's what we're getting. Like, I had a freak out this week about Big Brother Canada because it's just the complete opposite. Like, if there was any returning players in this current season of that, it would be total disaster. So it's really, really great that Survivor is actually casting people who know and understand the game, because that is giving the opportunity where if you put in maybe one or two returnees, they're not going to be able to get a hold on the game. And I think that that is for the best.
Yeah. I would honestly hope that they potentially take away at least that, seeing how things went, at least for Aubrey and Joey Amazing to this point, and I will happily grant that it looks like Wentworth and David are now both in positions where they could go very deep and potentially win this season and kind of maintain that surface level narrative of a returnee always making the finals and potentially winning. I would hope that, though, that they at least potentially could conclude it is no longer worth it to put returnees in with new players now that the new players know what's going on.
Yeah, well, and even if, you know, Wentworth or David go to the end and win, they've had to struggle so much harder than maybe was expected in this setup. So hopefully they take that away, but I've lost all faith in reality TV production learning.
Yeah, these poor returning players being mistreated so cruelly. I feel like I've seen pictures of you with Kelly Wentworth in person?
Yeah, so I met Kelly 3 years ago. She tweeted out that she was going to be in Calgary and what should she do? And I just like jokingly replied to her tweet. I was like, you mean besides hang out with me? And she like slid into my DMs and was like, hey, like, let's go for a drink. And then we went out for a couple of drinks. It was so much fun. We got very intoxicated, and it was just a really great experience. Like, she's one of the people that I've met in my life where you just like, she has this energy that just like draws you in. And so I'm very much rooting for her, especially after that, because like, she had no obligation to reply to my tweet, let alone hang out with me for like 4 or 5 hours. So
And this, yeah. I mean, this is before you were even in the like reality TV mix yourself. Was this before Second Chance for her?
No, it was after Second Chance.
Okay. Sorry, my timeline is totally fuzzy on recent Survivor years.
But yeah, and I had, I confided in Kelly that I like wanted to go on reality TV, and I like told her my whole story, and she gave me some of the best advice that I got from anyone ever. And it was literally just be yourself, but not the boring parts. And it literally like guided my entire process and was when I started finding success. So
yeah,
I owe a lot of that to her.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. So I'm guessing she is the like number one person we stan this season.
I would have trouble not standing her, to be honest.
Hey, you're talking to the OG-est of OG Kelly Wentworth stans. So, you know, way back in San Juan del Sur, I was the guy saying, I know this is never, ever going to happen, but in the fake world where Kelly Wentworth got a second shot at Survivor, I really feel like she could have been talented.
Well, so I guess this is the most Wentworth stan episode that they're going to get for a while here, so.
I think so, yeah. I think Dom really bringing that average down.
Yeah, how dare he?
Does with stanning many things, frankly. I'm not sure.
He has the worst taste.
What does Dom stan?
Honestly,
cats.
Secrets, cats, dogs now, traveling to mysterious places.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, even though he has type 1 diabetes. Which, I don't know if that's the best combination.
I'm not a medical professional, so he's still alive, so it's probably not that bad.
Yeah, he's going to be mad at me for not editing that out, but I'm not going to edit that out. Anyway, let's talk a little about this new episode, and I know most people are probably very sick of hearing me talk about the previously on Survivor, but I thought that was going to be a one-off thing last week. Like, the situation was we cut the previously on because there was just nothing else we felt like we could get rid of for that 30 seconds or whatever. But we show up again this week with absolutely nothing in the way of previously on Survivor. Is this a coincidence, or is this going to be a new running thing that there could routinely not be a previously on Survivor, in your opinion?
I'm just now going to never expect a previously on again, especially when they have such important things to show, like, you know, reward challenges. So honestly, could happen, could not happen. I'm never going to expect it again because it's very jarring when you're expecting it and it doesn't happen.
So I've reached out to not just casual Anna, but a couple other casuals that I correspond with from time to time about the current season of Survivor, and all of them across the board had the exact same comment, which is, I was really thrown off by having no previously on. I rely on the previously on to remind me of the important things, and I don't remember anything by the time the new episode rolls around. So with that in mind, I actually might think that that could be a popular reaction. I'm guessing most people don't even notice that it's missing, but it wouldn't shock me if the Facebook casuals are, I'm not going to say outraged, but making it known that they would appreciate a previously on.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder what they're saying on the Survivor Facebook page right now, because it's probably not good. They're like, what happened last week? I have no idea. I need someone to tell me.
I'm sure Liana is all over it. There's going to be a game on the BNB about their previously on reaction soon enough. So I guess just a couple other things from early in this episode. I wanted to get into the just kind of disparity between the returnees and the newbies, and in particular, your boy Rick here.
Do not call him my boy. How dare you?
After the fallout from the previous vote, both Kelly and David seem to recognize that this group, our Lesu group, turning against each other is more or less exactly what the Kama group wants, and they are pretty quickly willing to just kind of let bygones be bygones and strongly consider the idea of forming a new, you know, working together going forward and feeling a lot of trust between the two of them if the situation can work itself that way. Whereas we see from Rick in particular this week that his handling of these situations is, at least at this point, potentially leaving a bit to be desired. And I thought, not just it happens to be Rick this week, but with, in particularly the cases of Kelly and David, it really does seem like, despite all that we've been saying about how much tougher it is these days for veterans in these sharper newbie casts, it really seems like this is the kind of situation where having that experience and that focus really does pay huge dividends in knowing how much game is left and how little one blind side matters in the grand scheme of things. Whereas this week it's Rick, seems to be reacting a bit differently.
Yeah. So with Kelly and David, right, they know that another group is very, very cohesive and that they turned all the Lesu people against each other. And so they need to band together if they want to do anything, or else they're just going to get picked off one by one. They just know that that's going to happen. And they understand that they just have to work together. It's just the way it is. Whereas Rick is just like, no, this is not happening. And I'm not even going to pretend to work with you to your face and then betray you later. I'm going to literally in your face say that you are getting played, you won't get the numbers, I'm not coming with you. Oh, and can I have the other half of my idol back, please? It's just so, like, Rick from day one, just the way that he talks, I have found so off-putting. I don't know what it was. Like, I can't put my finger on what it is about him that I couldn't get behind. Everyone was really rooting for him, saying he had a really great chance to win. I'm like, please stop talking about that. Like, I just can't handle that world. And then I feel like this week we saw just like he was so over the top with it that now everyone sees it and I feel very vindicated.
Yeah, for me, I will gladly grant that this could just be specific to a person like me, but from the very beginning, I have found Rick to be very funny, and that drew me to him right away. And on top of that, it seemed like up until this week, I would have said Rick was getting some of the most like glowing treatment from the editors or producers or whatever you want to call it in terms of how he was being presented on the show out of the entire cast. And I thought that probably meant good things for him as well. And having Rick have such a kind of change of character this week, I would say, as far as how he's come across on the show, it is to this point one of the biggest blindsides of the season for me. And I still think there's plenty of time to recover, to Rick cover, thank you. Especially, yes, Kirsten, welcome to the show. especially given the kind of recent changes they've made. Like, I'm thinking Adam Klein and Nick Wilson got some particularly bad episodes sprinkled in there, that Rick is still not even someone I'm ruling out now after such a bad week, which even this time like a year or two ago would have been 100% the case. But I don't know really what came over Rick this week, because it seems like at least on paper he would do exactly what you're saying, right, where he would at least lie to their face and can maintain the option of potentially linking back up with them in the future, or if things change in the next day or two, doing so even sooner than that. But it seems like he, for I don't know how else to put it other than it seems like he felt welcomed by like Ron and the Eric and Julie and the kind of like former top of that comma alliance. It seems like did a really good job making him feel safe.
Yeah, they definitely made him feel super welcome, to the extent that he feels that he can just like beg to be included with them at tribal council, and that's totally fine. It was not a good look. I don't think, like, the only thing the entire episode for Rick that wasn't a bad look is when he dropped from the challenge and he was like, now five of the fittest people are out of the competition.
See, I feel like he's had a ton of those kinds of things sprinkled in over the course of the season. And again, it may just be like my sense of humor that really is into that sort of that Rick cover being hilarious kind of sense of humor that's into that sort of thing. But I would still be on the lookout for Devins, at the very least being kind of a major player within the game going forward, just because even though it seems like he was certainly rubbing a few people the wrong way this past week, to say the least, I would guess that just based on his position within the game, it's going to take a little while for him to get voted out, right? It still seems like people have so many bigger priorities than Devins, who, as far as I can tell, is a total free agent at this point.
Yeah, and I also feel like there's the opportunity where he's going to try something to get that other half of the idol back, and so we don't really know
yeah.
what that would be. So I feel like we have not seen the last of him, unfortunately.
Do you see that happening? Because I was thinking about that earlier today. I had just been taking it for granted that at some point they would, they being Devins and David, would find some way to use the idol in a mutually beneficial situation rather than just both sit on an otherwise useless half of an idol. But it wouldn't blow me away now after this last episode if both of those halves just go unused the entire game.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm thinking too. I feel like David is smart enough that he would be extremely wary about giving that half up.
What
so any situation
get,
where...
What if we see another idol that's split in half and you can combine two pieces that you got separately for one idol?
So we got mix and match idols now?
Hey,
like, this isn't the bargain bin. I just can't handle it.
If that's what they are doing on Survivor Season 42, that would not surprise me at all, that you find idols incrementally.
Yeah, hopefully not this. I just don't know. There's so much going on this season that I feel like an extra layer of complication might be a bit too much, especially when they're not doing the previously on. People aren't going to know what's going on.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it really is the rug that ties the room together.
It is nice that they're doing the idol count next to people's names now, though.
I do like that a lot.
It's weird that they didn't start it, like, at the start of the season, but...
Well, did you hear the backstory?
I saw the tweet.
Yeah, someone literally just tweeted it at Jeff, and he was like, hey, good call. We'll start doing that now. And they did it, which is great. Although, unfortunately, we saw another War Dog confessional this week, and it still says law school student. Word has not gotten back to them that it should just be law student, especially when Julia's thing says medical student, not medical school student.
I think you need to be tweeting that directly at Jeff Probst.
I don't know what it would take to get me to at Jeff Probst in a tweet.
Well, he's taking ideas from Twitter now, so you could make your mark on the season by fixing the grammar in Wardog's Chiron.
I feel like I have a better chance of them seeing it by saying it on the podcast than by tweeting it at Jeff's mentions at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't say you have to do it right this second.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, as much as... it's awesome that Jeff is taking these ideas from Twitter. It seems like Jeff signs on to Twitter at 7:45 p.m. on Wednesdays and stays on for about an hour. And then when the season is over, he's gone until the next season premiere.
Yeah, he just closes the door. He's like, Twitter's not here. I don't need to worry about it. He might pop in once or twice to just throw out something like inspirational or about casting or something, and then he's gone.
Yeah, and in his defense, that is 100% the move. If you are Jeff Probst, I think he is using Twitter correctly. As much as I'm, it sounds like I may be giving him a hard time, I think that is absolutely a defensible kind of approach if you are Jeff himself. So along with Rick, another person that stood out to me this week in terms of having a bad episode, not just in terms of the vote not going their way, but I would say having... almost, it seemed to me at least, like kind of negative manipulation is Ron, who for the early days I was really liking. You know, we didn't get to see a ton of him, but he seemed to be in there really mixing it up, playing hard, and that continues to be the case. But it seemed to me to be a pattern that was forming a little bit and kind of cemented this week of Ron being like a diabolical puppet master, at least in his own mind. Where are you on Ron at this point?
Yeah, I would say the exact same page. He came across very, very poorly. Like, there have been moments in the past where someone will say something like, I'm glad our team didn't win reward because I need people to be weaker so that they'll lose. And it comes across as like schemey and strategic, but not bad. But Ron came across as just like straight up evil in this episode. And like even at Tribal Council, he just, the like look on his face when the votes didn't go his way made him look really dumb. And to like use the family visit, that like he just, everything was very negative in tone, even if it's something that's been done in the past that didn't come across as negatively. Like, he's being shown as a true evil villain.
Right. He had a quote that I wrote down right after talking about not being too upset about losing the challenge because it means Wentworth and Lauren don't get to eat and be strong. He says, I want them feeling lost and lonely because I'm the puppet master and I'm trying to break them down. And I was going to say, I'm sure Ron's not actually that bad out there on the island, but that's the kind of thing that's hard to like edit together using Frankenstein footage. I'm sure he did utter that sentence as in one continuous string at some point, but I would imagine this is like the prime time in the game for the people like Ron who have had pretty much everything go their way to this point to be giving these confessionals like that. Like the type of person who is kind of inclined to count their chickens, I guess, a bit, because they haven't been on a tribe with Wendy yet, this is the point where they can see the numbers for the remainder of the game right in front of them, and it starts to... they start to take it for granted, I suppose, and give these overconfident confessionals. And I'm sure the editors love it every time this season, every time this part of the season rolls around.
Yeah. And the other thing too is, when he was talking to Aurora, and Aurora's very upset that she was left out of the vote and she thinks she's going to be next, and he's not even really consoling her. He's just there. And then when he tells Eric about the conversation, he's like, yeah, Aurora cried and cried. And he just seems horrible.
Yeah. I would say, as of this week, I don't know what the path is where Ron now goes on to win the game.
It would take a big turn.
Yeah. But, you know, again, like, after Nick last season, and so, yeah, it's certainly evolved to the point where winners are capable of having some overtly negative things make air. I just don't know how it doesn't seem like this is going to be a one-off situation from Ron. It seems like this is going to be essentially his character the rest of the time.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to get an escalation of this behavior until he's gone.
Yeah. And I'm here for that. I think Ron is a potentially really fun kind of villain for the season.
I mean, I love to root for a villain, so I guess that means I don't hate Ron.
It doesn't sound like you at all.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually normally so nice, so.
Yeah. I guess let's talk a little bit about Edge of Extinction, because we see Aubrey wins this week's scavenger hunt where she gets an advantage and gets to practice on the giant pole that has ropes on it that you need to get yourself through. I don't know what that challenge is called, but that's going to be part of the re-entry challenge at Final Six or Final Five.
Is it called a rope maze?
Maybe. That sounds right. Hey, sure. Rope maze.
I don't know if that's right or not.
From now on, that is a rope maze. Absolutely. You need to find the right way to maneuver yourself through the ropes to get yourself free. It's a rope maze. And she also gets an extra vote for the official record that we end up seeing go to Aurora. What have you been enjoying these scavenger hunts and just the Edge of Extinction focus in the episodes in general?
I feel like they're fun moments. Like Keith running away from everyone was very enjoyable. Aubrey today when she starts walking away and Chris is like, I'm gonna get you. That was pretty fun. But Reem just being totally unimpressed is always enjoyable. Like I've never connected to anyone more than when she was like, I was gonna have a nap. Now there's a map and a puzzle. Like
yeah,
I hate maps and puzzles.
Reem is incredible. Reem is really the standout from Edge of Extinction and like single-handedly making that entire process almost worth it. We'll see how it plays out. But at this point, I've been mostly loving it because of Reem. Like the very end of this week's episode, I'm sure plenty of people tuned out after like the next time on when they were giving the final words and they show who voted for whom, but they've also been including clips from the Edge of Extinction even after that. And this week's clip was Eric shows up and says, oh hey, this is better than I thought it was gonna be, and it just cuts to Reem saying, dude, don't get excited, and then just smash cut into like CSI or whatever's on after Survivor now.
I'm pretty sure that was Million Dollar Mile.
Yeah, you're right. It is LeBron James's Million Dollar Mile. Have you watched that?
I can't believe
you
would forget about it. No.
I watched the first 2.5 runners of the first episode that aired, and at that point I felt like I had pretty much experienced the entire show.
It's like, what is it? They're just running away from people?
No, it is. It's a cool twist on kind of an American Ninja Warrior style race where you get a 2-minute head start on this like professional athlete, and you can go through as many obstacles as you feel you will have time to make it through in and not get caught in that 2 minutes. And for each one you do, you get, it's kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. The first one's worth $25,000, the second one's worth $50,000, the third one's worth whatever. Where you can keep going until you get caught, but people will generally just bank it at a certain point and not run the risk of losing the whole thing. And if you go through the whole course, I assume you get $1 million.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Although once you see people do it 2.5 times, it kind of just looks like the same thing.
Well, that does, it does make sense. But no, I picked up the challenge this year, so I Survivor ends and I switch right over to MTV and watch that.
Where are you on the hotly contentious debate about if it's good or bad that all of these shows are on Wednesday night, having the BB Can 7 into Survivor into the challenge block on Wednesdays?
So I don't love it because I don't live in Eastern Standard Time. So when I want to watch it with you guys, I have to be back in my house at 5 p.m. watching TV. And then I am there until 8 or 9. And it's just a lot. And it's hard to get home on time. So yeah. I would like one less thing.
Yeah, I would imagine. No, I mean, it seems like it's often the case that being outside of the Eastern time zone is not the move when it comes to both TV shows and also sports. Although, obviously, tonight's championship game, a bit of a different situation considering they didn't start it until like 9:20 p.m. Eastern, which is just insane for a Monday night.
For a school night, it's a lot. And I feel like it wouldn't be that bad. But now that I talk to so many people who live in Eastern time, it's just like I live my life as though I'm also there.
Yeah.
And so it's very inconvenient.
Yeah, no, part of me has thought about just the prospect of living out west and being essentially unable to like go on Twitter for the 3 hours between things airing on the East Coast and West Coast. But I don't know. It seems like it's a potentially worthwhile trade-off during specifically football season. Having football start at 10 a.m. is a dream world. I can't believe how good the West Coast has it there. But for, enough on that, I would say, Kirsten, let me ask
Wait,
you
people don't care about time zone corner?
I know, I'm sorry. But I need to cut that conversation short. Going back to Edge of Extinction, what do you think about having Joe and Aubrey out of the game this early? Were you someone who, certainly like me, and I'm guessing like most other people, went into this season thinking the returnees would have a pretty comfortable time out there?
Yeah, I thought that the returnees were going to be a lock for jury for sure.
Well, they are.
In like normal jury, whatever. But the Aubrey blindside was just so well done that I couldn't help but enjoy it, even though I feel horrible for Aubrey. And then with Joe going, I feel like it's just crazy to let him go to the island with the jurors, just be social with them, and he doesn't have to worry about winning any immunities until like later if he comes back in. I feel like that was short-sighted to send him home / to Extinction Island.
Oh, so you think they got rid of him too early? They should have let him stay in and get some blood on his hands?
Well, yeah, because at this point, he's on the jury. He gets to hang out with them all day. He doesn't have to worry about the strategy or who's going to get voted out. He doesn't have to get any blood on his hands. And then he just has to, like, win a competition and then win, like, what, an immunity and fire? And then he would be in the end. And yeah. Then who's going to vote against him when all they've had is just, like, happy-go-lucky Joe and never had to worry about him?
So I would say, generally speaking, I think that is a concern I would have if I was someone in the game, that Joe being on Edge of Extinction is potentially the best place he could ever ask to be. But in seeing, you know, hearing you talk about how great their blindside was on Aubrey reminded me of her getting up and saying, wow, you guys are incredible players. I can't believe it. And this episode right now, Eric gets blindsided and gets up and says, oh my God, you guys are amazing players. I can't believe it. I would suspect that this could be a jury made up of people who really do value a strong strategic game, or at least some people, kind of some influential jury members, swaying it that direction. And although I absolutely agree that Joe has a lot of things going for him on Edge of Extinction and probably would be in good shape to get some votes, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion at all that if he does end up making it there, that he's just a lock to win. Although I will happily grant that is a very conceivable timeline as well, as you laid out. He just needs to win one immunity, or I guess win the reentry, win one immunity and make a fire, and then he's in the finals. How is he still drawing live for you? Is that a scenario you think is possible?
I don't think we've seen enough of him to really buy into that, but I wouldn't, I think, 100% write anybody off, because I don't trust anyone anymore after last season with Kara. So I don't, I don't trust anyone.
I'm sorry. That one's on me. That one.
You and Matt Liguori.
That's my bad. And Matt's. He should get some of the blame as well. Yeah. But overall, just Edge of Extinction, to go back to it, or just getting the insight that we have gotten on Edge of Extinction, I think has been really cool. And I do want to kind of get these takes on the record while I still can before the eventual Edge of Extinction re-entry potentially really damages the overall reputation of the twist. I think it has been really awesome getting to see the people who have been blindsided dealing with that and still feeling like they have a chance to get back in the game, and seeing their reaction now that it hasn't gone their way the first time.
Yeah, it's really great. And then after the first re-entry, you know, when Jeff let them all feel so devastated before building them back up that they get to go back out and continue if they want, that was truly incredible. So It is giving some good moments.
Yeah. And I guess one other thing, before we get too far off of Aubrey, since I'm not sure when else this would come up, you flagged up earlier the idea of Ron, and I think Eric was involved in a lot of this as well, kind of leveraging that loved one's visit as a big reason for the comma group to stay strong, and don't we all want to see our loved ones? Dalton Ross tweeted out something immediately following the episode that was like a screenshot of an interview he had done with Aubrey before the game even began. He had asked all of the players their own ideas for twists they would like to see implemented on the show, or changes to the show, I guess, in kind of broader terms. And Aubrey's exact answer was very much related to this. She said, I know this is going to be unpopular and probably not going to happen, but I think they should get rid of the loved ones challenge, just because so many people are playing to make the loved ones challenge. They're, like, that checkpoint is a major deal for them. And this is something that I don't know the last time this has come up, but we used to talk about this all the time back in the early days of this podcast, the idea of people playing Checkpoint Survivor and Checkpoint Big Brother, where they have goals of first, don't be the first one out, and second, make it to the swap or make it to the merge, and then make it to the jury, back when that was a separate checkpoint from make it to the merge. And then the next one is always make it to the family visit, and then to the final four or final three or whatever it is. And I genuinely have always been a big believer in essentially what I think Aubrey is saying, which is Checkpoint Survivor or Checkpoint Big Brother, as the case may be, is one of the worst things the game could ever ask for, is having people playing with that mentality.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And like the minute all of this was coming up in the episode, like I immediately tweeted out, okay, well, I guess I hope they don't do a loved one's visit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a saying in poker, and it's a saying that has stuck around because it's true, which is scared money is lost money. And people playing Checkpoint Survivor are essentially the scared money out there.
I'm going to pretend I know what that means.
If you're playing super conservatively, you're not at all putting yourself in a position to be maximizing profit.
Got it.
Yeah. You got to take big swings, Kirsten. It's all about big moves. I don't know if Jeff says that enough.
Big moves. I don't know if I could ever be persuaded to do a big move. I'm very conservative in games.
Yes. I meant to say earlier, I'm pretty sure the reason you used the coin to fill out your bracket is because you just wanted to flip a coin 63 times to gamble.
No, I didn't want to not be included in the bracket, but I didn't have time to put in any work at all. So I
No one
just.
puts work into their bracket.
Well, I don't know. It's my first time ever doing
I
one.
would say, honestly, you put in way more work flipping a coin 63
Okay, I
times than.
didn't flip a physical coin, Colin. I found a website that was like flip a coin. You just
Okay.
click it and it just told you if it was heads or tails.
Still, most people just look at the school names and click whatever one seems right in the moment.
Well, I don't know anything about the schools in America, so I feel like this is against Canadians and it's not
What
okay.
percentage of the schools had you heard of?
I truly could not even begin to tell you because I don't remember more than like three of them.
Okay, so a low percentage.
Yeah.
And in fairness, if you had said, I don't think I could name more than like five universities in Canada.
That's pretty good, though. We don't have that many.
McGill, Dalhousie, whichever one you work at, UCalgary. I don't know.
Really
That's
glad I'm about to
I'm
stop
out.
working there.
I'm tapped out. I have nothing left in my Canadian reserves on the fly.
You got to three.
Yeah. I mean, I
Okay.
could just do what? You Toronto and you Alberta. I could just name.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're at
Okay, I can
five.
keep naming cities, but I don't know anything about
Alberta's
them.
not a city.
Saskatchewan Tech.
No, we don't have, it's very different here with the like technical schools, and we don't need to get into it. It's
All
fine.
right. And actually, final question, until I potentially think of other ones later, about this Edge of Extinction and just kind of weirdness going on with this season overall. You excited for a 13-person jury?
No, why would anybody be excited about that?
Why
I
not
like a
be
nice
excited? It's
seven
cool.
person jury.
I agree, it seems a little weird, but on this season, where I think we're kind of on the same page of not really caring that much about game integrity, why not have a 13-person jury? I'm honestly kind of mad that we're going to miss out on the full 15-person jury.
It's just so excessive.
Yeah, it's a bit
It's like,
much.
I feel like Final Tribal is going to be such a mess. It's going to be like, what's your name again? I never met you.
Right. I mean, it could literally be Reem deciding between three people she's never met. So,
That's crazy.
yeah. Is it in season 38? Is it? I agree it is based on the first 37 seasons, but in terms of keeping things exciting going forward, I think they're at the point where they're throwing everything they can at the wall.
I just don't understand how you can be like, okay, everything, well, not everything, but like things have been mostly reasonable for 37 seasons. You know what? Season 38, that's where we're gonna take a big swing and we're gonna go nuts. I just don't understand why now? Why like this at this point? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know why specifically now, but maybe it has something to do with the idea of like we're pretty confident season 40 is going to be a big deal, so let's put something pretty close to right before that and be a little riskier there.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And then if even if this season and next are kind of weak, then season 40 is still going to bring people back in.
Right, I would suspect season 39 is going to be a lot more spaghetti getting thrown at the wall.
Oh God.
Well, can't wait.
It's modern art.
yeah, we have this immunity challenge this week that is like an endurance and balance challenge where you stand up on your tiptoes, holding a block up on your head, and when the block falls, you are out of the challenge. And the big drama comes when Lauren decides not to quit, even though she feels like she's about to pass out. She ends up just passing out and falling right off of her perch, which definitely made my stomach drop. When I was rewatching this episode for notes, I could not look away fast enough. As soon as I saw she was about to go down, I don't know why, but I just watched that documentary. I don't know if you've heard of it, but I'm sure people out there have heard of the movie Free Solo about the guy climbing El Capitan with
Oh, why
no
do people keep
ropes.
talking about this to me? It gives me anxiety just to think about it.
I mean, I never need to see that movie again. I wanted to puke the entire time, and that's what watching Lauren fall was like for me. Because to see someone go down knowing they have no way of bracing themselves is a horrifying thing to look at.
Yeah, she just totally dove. But I feel like it's not really fair to say she decides to fall when she knows she's going to pass it.
No, obviously, I'm not saying like, she made the decision to fall instead of step down. I'm sorry if it came across that way.
That's literally what you said.
No, she acknowledged, I'm about to pass out, and then stayed up there instead
of... No, but that happens so fast. Like, have you ever fainted or passed out before?
Once before. And
it literally is so fast.
Yes, I agree. Much faster... Then it happened so fast, I would not have had time to say, I'm about to pass out.
I would have had time to say it, but instead I just was like, I'm not okay. And then all of a sudden I was on the floor. So I feel like, I don't know, it was just, it was very weird. And like, you could just see in her eyes that like, you could tell she's like seeing those like white and black blotches.
I do not in any way mean to place the onus on Lauren for not quitting. That's not what I did. I don't mean to make it sound like she was a moron for staying up there.
No, of course not. And I just love her reaction, though, after when she's like, oh, man, like, that's so embarrassing.
Right. Yeah, that was awesome. It seems like she handled it just about as well as she could have. And the one time that I did pass out, it was like, I can remember it. I was in my room. It was a summer afternoon. I was lying on my stomach on my rug doing a puzzle, listening to the Red Sox for like 3 hours straight. I stood up apparently too fast, passed right out and landed dead on the in the middle of my floor again. And when I came to, it felt like I had just gotten a full night's sleep and I didn't know that anything wrong had happened. And it's got to be so weird to be Lauren in this situation where she may not even have realized she was just doing an immunity challenge.
Yeah, well, I think you might actually be the only person who's passed out in a less cool way than me fainting in a gas station after getting blood taken.
Doing puzzles and listening to the Red Sox on the radio all summer isn't cool.
I mean, it's not the worst, but...
I can remember the exact puzzle that it was. It was a puzzle of marbles that...
How many puzzles do you do?
No, very few. That's why I remember what it was.
Okay, I was going to say, like, you're saying it like it's an accomplishment. I'm like, oh, who knew Colin was such a big jigsaw puzzle guy?
No, I'm not. I had, like, three, and that's how I know which... It was the second time I'd done the marble puzzle. Yeah.
Do you think you just went totally nuts from looking at that puzzle and that's why you you passed out?
I stood up too fast. I got a rush of blood to my – I don't know if this even counts as faint. This is the same thing that happened to – right? It's like that happened to like Joe on Second Chance and Lauren here. I could feel it in my head like a blood rush or whatever. I don't know what's actually happening, but that's how I've heard it described. And then just dropped. And were it not for the fact – that I was wearing like my normal street clothes, like I said, I would have thought I had just woken up for the morning when I came to. I had no memory of what had just happened.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it was crazy. Great story to spend 5 minutes on.
Everyone now knows about your marble puzzle.
Yeah, what I was getting to as before you accused me of berating Lauren, which maybe I did.
You did.
Is when Lauren goes down, we see Aurora and Victoria are still up on their platforms, and Aurora immediately is trying to negotiate. Now, she, I don't imagine, has a great view of what is going on with Lauren, but it does seem like she could reasonably interpret that something's up, although probably not anticipate the severity of the situation. But what did you think of not only Aurora and her attempt to try to talk Victoria off of this, but also Julie seemed to take quite an issue here. I guess whose side were you on in terms of who was out of bounds here?
Well, first of all, I don't think Victoria or Aurora could see anything from where they were, so they had no idea like the severity of the situation.
Wouldn't someone say, hey, Lauren just passed out?
Yes, but Julie first of all said, it's okay, keep going, which made it seem like, okay, everything's fine. They can continue the challenge. And so then, of course, Aurora is going to try and make a bargain. And then suddenly, Julie's not okay with it. I just thought it was a little bit much. I was definitely Team Aurora in that situation.
Yeah, I thought Julie, as much as I have been liking Julie over the course of this season, it did seem totally understandable why Aurora would be in that kind of mode in the situation, especially when she doesn't have eyes on everything going on with Lauren. So
Sorry, and Julie was the one who told him to keep going, so I don't really understand how she gets to be outraged.
I'll take your word for it. What have you I believe you said that both Julie and Aurora were people you really liked entering this season. Have they been living up to your preseason expectations?
I feel like, I haven't really seen either of them enough to really get that sense. I feel like Aurora had a really good episode this week, which made me feel good about, you know, how I was feeling about her preseason. And then Julie, people keep going on about these Julie truthers, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess she's fine. I don't like how she talks about sending people back to extinction as in, like, that would be evil. I would never do that. Like, come on, what are you doing? And yeah, I just don't like the way she kind of moralizes things.
Well, I think that's pretty much what we saw with Aurora as well, with her not liking Aurora trying to negotiate as Lauren was down on the ground. It was the same kind of idea of moralizing a strategic issue potentially. But I'm certainly not a Julie truther, but I am seeing what people are saying about Julie potentially looking good to make a deep run here, because while I think we are both Team Aurora in terms of what went on during the challenge, I don't know if the audience was meant to come away with that same impression. It seemed to me like it was intended to be received as, look at how much Julie cares, the same way the first time around of, oh, wouldn't it be awful to send someone right back to Edge of Extinction? The super fan, I guess, will say, wouldn't be that awful. Boston Rob did it. People do it all the time. But the casual fan, I think, would agree with Julie in both circumstances.
Well, I don't like being set up for something, so I'm just going to go opposite of what they're telling me to think.
That's the Dom approach, so I'm glad to have you on the podcast.
Well, I figured you invited me because you're missing Dom. You needed a blonde Canadian contrarian.
That's right. Three for three. So, yeah, Julie and I don't even know what I was about to say about Julie. But Aurora, what I meant to say is Aurora ends up winning the immunity challenge either way there. So end up. What's that?
Do you think that Victoria maybe dropped on purpose?
I think if Victoria were going to drop on purpose, she would have done it when Aurora was making the offer. To me, the fact that she didn't fall seemed like a pretty solid indicator that she was not thrilled with the idea of Aurora being for sure safe at this vote. And I would have thought that in Aurora's shoes as well, she should take that as a sign of, Victoria may not want me to win this.
Well, because I feel like Victoria was so solid the whole time. You could see she was just so zen. And then maybe she just didn't want the other, like, comma people to see her do it. I don't know. It just didn't, like, the way she fell just didn't seem the same as when some of the others fell. I don't know.
So with that I've got my kind of in mind, and this is actually, to go back to Julie, maybe this is the thought that I was prematurely voicing about Julie. I would say when Julie won her immunity, and in the case of both Aurora and Victoria here, and these are just specific instances of something that I think is just a honestly increasingly important kind of survivor fundamental, especially now that we're merging with so many damn people. If you do not need to win the individual immunity necklace when there are this many people left, don't win it. I think, honestly, I'm surprised I didn't bring this up when Julie won her necklace, but I think the same is roughly true of Aurora here, although I think this is more forgivable just given Aurora's political situation entering this round. But I would say certainly Julie the first time around, as awesome as it is to win immunity, and maybe she wanted to hang on for as long as Joe was still in the game, and in that case, totally fine. But I think one of the worst things you can do if you are Julie or Victoria is demonstrate that you are a threat to win these purely physical competitions out of a group of 12. I think that is the decidedly wrong message to send this soon. I think that's something if you are capable of doing really well in endurance and similar challenges like these, balance and things like that pop up all the time, that is something you want to keep in your back pocket.
Yeah, you definitely don't want people to see it that early. All it's going to do is put a target on you for sure.
Yeah, I don't remember who the other immunities came down to, but if I were Julie, I believe Joe went out. He was like third to last. In that spot, like if you were a game bot, you just drop and let the other person have it and not have that so-and-so won a necklace target on your back already. It's hard to fault anyone too much for winning immunity challenges, but it's just too nitpick the most insane degree. I think there is at least some potential merit in throwing in any one of those spots. All right. Well, I guess kind of on Victoria, since she's come up, where are you in terms of how she's been delivering for you? I think she was another person you mentioned being somewhat into preseason.
Yeah, I like knew she was there, but it wasn't like nothing really drew me to her in the preseason. But I feel like she's been really, really strong. I like that she is just totally willing to do whatever it takes. She'll say things like, oh yeah, it looks like they've decided to trust me. Like, I don't know why. Like, I just really like that. The only thing I haven't liked was it was like forever ago. And she was like, what's the point in looking for idols? Yeah. Where are they supposed to be? That was like literally the only thing all season where it's like, whatever, but I could see that as something that's shown to be like, look, she didn't even need the idol. She did so well without it, that kind of thing.
Right. I think that honestly is like my only big mark against Victoria at this point is that confessional where she is talking about like, who the hell even wants a hidden immunity idol? And then we smash cut to Lauren finding a hidden immunity idol.
Yeah.
I don't know how good that is supposed to make Victoria look, but at the same time she is so clearly just unflappable in being too cool for school that I don't know what else you're supposed to do with her in certain situations other than I think the argument would be just not show that as the setup to Lauren finding her idol.
Yeah, exactly. Victoria is very cool. I think that's the best word to describe her.
Right. Cool Victoria even.
Yeah, you could say that.
All right. So it's been said in the past. I've been liking Victoria for in a major way as a character, just to be clear. I think she is a lot of fun on the show and as a player seems to have a really solid head on her shoulders. Is she someone you feel like could still win the game?
I feel like she's up there for sure.
Yeah. I know she's in – this is a season where a lot of people are all over the place in terms of edit, myself very much included. But I feel like Victoria has been a pretty popular name for a lot of people.
I think there's a lot of people who are really standing Victoria. And again, as I said, I'm not even trying this season like to just decipher who the winner is. I'm just letting it happen because I will never trust you guys ever again.
Okay. Well, I feel like – someday I'll earn your trust back and then just do you even more wrong.
Yeah, probably. We'll need a pretty good olive branch after that for sure.
Yeah. So I'm very much excited for the prospect of Victoria being a long-term player in this game. And at this point, I would anticipate that being the case, even if things do end up kind of going sideways here after she ended up flipping along with Gavin and Julia this week to split up that comma group. I still feel like Victoria is not going to be a big target pretty much no matter what happens over the next few weeks. And so that is a pretty exciting prospect as far as I'm concerned. But what did you think about that big decision that we saw mostly through Julia and Gavin's perspective, admittedly, but having the three kind of younger people in this comma six split off and join up with the Lesus. I know this has been another hot debate all week. Was this too soon, Kirsten, in your opinion, to give up the numbers and potentially put a lot of the power back into the Lesu hands?
I mean, looking at it just straight on, maybe it was a little bit soon. But you know what? It was exciting and at least something happened. Like, I feel like we're going to be unhappy if they do it too soon. We're going to be unhappy if they don't do it soon enough. Like, at least they're actively trying to do something that they think will better themselves. And I feel like this group with the Lesu and the younger Kama people is probably going to be more cohesive anyways than that mixture with like the much older and younger people anyways. Like people want to work with people that are around their like their life stage, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like this will be more solid anyways. They'll have more in common.
Right. I would say at least on paper, it's probably too soon, and maybe one contributing factor is that Kama group just being together for so long and never having to go to votes. It wouldn't surprise me at all if this is something that they've been wanting to do since day 8 or whatever, and they've just never had a chance to branch out. But with the kind of commentariat being what it is, where everyone who doesn't win that made a move too early was trigger happy, and everyone that doesn't win that didn't make a move in time was just a sheep, and it's really just the winner did everything right, that ends up being like the usual analysis. I love seeing the impulse on so many of these people being, let's go for it now. I am, if it's a 50-50 between going too early or waiting too long, I always want to be on the side of going too early if I'm out there playing, because then at least there's still room to rebound and play your way back in, which I'm guessing at least a couple of these people are going to do. I think as much issue as anyone can take with Julia, Gavin, and Victoria for potentially leaving too many lessos in for comfort, I don't anticipate that this is something that's just going to get flipped back on them immediately, right? Are you seeing any situation where one of these three is under immediate duress?
Yeah, I don't think any of them are going to be the immediate target. I still think that the Lesu would be the target in this case. And if this does go poorly, I think that Victoria is the best insulated to make it through that. Like, especially with them showing us her thinking, oh, maybe this is too early. I feel like they've really kind of protected her in the case that this goes wrong.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I could see is kind of like a next level play from the Lesus, if they can, now that Kama has so conclusively divided, kind of play the middle and have both ends of the Kama group jockeying for their votes. It would be honestly a pretty heads up move, I think, to take out specifically someone like Gavin that I think has been shown really strong in a lot of these challenges. I know Joe was getting a lot of the focus pre-merge, but in many of those challenges, Gavin was there with him or right behind him or competing against him in the post-swap versions of these challenges, really holding his own. And if you take out Gavin and just leave in a Julia and Victoria combo on one side and then Ron and Julie combo on the other side, I'm not sure how that foursome's ever really coming back together. Call me crazy. So that seems like a potentially compelling dynamic there that would leave specifically Gavin on the outs. But generally speaking, I do think that this is a move that, while it may again just leave too much room to play for too many lesu people going forward, I do think it is, at the very least, justifiable in their minds at the time.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that just came out of nowhere. And again, I would much rather see them do it too early than too late.
Do you have any strong takes on either of Gavin or Julia at this point?
They're fun. They're fine. Nothing crazy.
Yeah, I very much like both of them. Frankly, we got to see tragically little of particularly Julia for a mm-hmm. while, but this was a big episode for her. And I thought she was a lot of fun, and we've got to see just bits and pieces of Gavin along the way, and he essentially across the board seems to be pretty impressive to me, and out there certainly trying very hard at the very least, and seems to have a solid enough head on his shoulders when it comes to the game that by no means am I counting him out at this point. It would just seem to me like he may be the one of this group in the most precarious position going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And like both of them, like they're nice people. They're trying to play the game. It would be nice to see more of them so that we could form like stronger opinions.
Yeah. What did you think of War Dog? It seemed really being the one to pull in Julia and Gavin and kind of ease them into the idea of, hey, if you guys want to flip, you got the war dog. I am a loyal soldier right here. We could potentially make something happen. It seemed like yet another week where the war dog came across really, really well. I know he was someone I'm guessing a lot of people had some preconceived ideas about entering this season just based on the aesthetic similarities to Tony Vlachos. But at least for me, it has been genuinely mind-blowing seeing what War Dog, at least the way it's come across on the TV show, has been capable of to this point, because I would have thought everyone out there would see nothing but Tony as well and be terrified. But routinely, people are talking about what a great job War Dog is doing, and as much as you know, he may be all over the place from time to time, he is right about this issue, and we should be listening to War Dog. And he's a lot like former Survivor winner Tony Vlachos. He's getting name dropped in confessionals. What do you think about the War Dog to this point, Kirsten?
I've actually felt like really good about War Dog. I feel like he's gotten a lot of negative attention up to this point that I don't think is really that deserved. Like, his social media activity is wild, but on the show, I haven't seen anything to really have a problem with. The scene in this episode where they start with him talking to Gavin and then and Julia, I thought they were setting him up for a moment like Aubrey had earlier in the season, where she's using the same verbiage when she's talking to everybody, and then everyone kind of is able to fact check that and realize that they're getting the exact same pitch, because he's using the same things. Like, I want to have open lines of communication. Like, I'm here for you. Like, the exact same kind of phrasing that. So I thought we were getting set up for that. And so when it didn't go that way, I was very surprised, but it was really good. And I also really liked when he was talking to Rick and he's like, no, like, Rick, this is a game. Like, you have to use logic. Cause yeah. I felt like somebody needed to sit Rick down and tell him that.
No, I had the exact same thought about comparing that scene of him saying very similar things to Gavin and Julia with the one used earlier, I would say, to bury Aubrey and make her look like an actively bad Survivor player back when she was still in the main game. And it totally comes down to the reception to War Dog being that way. We hear in confessionals from Gavin and Julia about how much sense he's making, and it's clear that that approach is working for him. And actually, this leads me to an email we got this week, and here's probably the closest thing we're going to get to like the edit zone this week. So earmuffs or fast forward like 30 seconds if you don't want to hear about that. But we got an interesting edit zone email about the War Dog from Lewis this week that I have now successfully pulled up on my phone and can stop delaying. He says, hi guys, love the podcast. Thank you. But would just like to express my thoughts on the edit, because I completely disagree with Colin's take. All right, off to a bad start. This is one of the most unpredictable edits ever. IMO, this is basically a War Dog coronation at this point. Some points in his favor. Before they scrapped the previously on segments, War Dog received credit 3 times in a row for the boot, sometimes in places in the past where they've given it to other people. This last episode, War Dog was contrasted with both remaining players to make him look better, while David and Wentworth took kind of a defeatist attitude at the well. They showed War Dog and it working with Julia and Gavin and emphasizing like the importance of never giving up. During the merge episode, the first and only episode where he hasn't voted correctly, he was completely invisible, and all of the blame for that group fucking up was placed on Wentworth. And he's basically got a mastermind edit at the moment, and they're going out of their way to express that he's correct with things like the Wendy vote and his assessment of the dynamics over on Kama. And then on top of that, he's gotten some reasonably good personal content, and he was, quote, born to play this game, gets compared to Tony Vlachos, things of that nature, and gets time to express his strategic rationale. End of email. And I want to say, Lewis, despite the shaky start there, disagreeing strongly with me, I'm gonna extend the olive branch to you, buddy. I loved this email when I saw it, and as clueless as I continue to be about the winner edit overall, I thought there were some very compelling points at least being floated here in this email about the War Dog. And even if they don't come in, this was a very entertaining kind of theory.
Yeah, you know what? If this is right, then Lewis will be the only person I trust about the Survivor edit moving forward.
But if he's wrong, then you're never going to trust him again.
But if he's wrong, I will continue to never trust anybody again about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Wardog is certainly in the mix, and I think I fully agree with what Lewis is saying about the way it seems like he's coming across on the show. It does seem to me like Wardog is Vlachos-esque in his approach to Survivor and being good at playing that style. It's such a tough kind of style to play, especially when he is now like down in the numbers and trying to make something happen for himself, as opposed to like Tony was during all of Cagayan, like having just a majority and deciding which majority he wanted to go with. The Wardog, I think, is playing in a much tougher situation and really knocking it out of the park. And combined with all of those points laid out in that email, I think Wardog's got to be very high up in the consideration for eventual winners here.
Yeah, there's only like a few moments where Wardog's really been made to look very bad, and it's not even that bad, but it's just like when you see Lauren being like, no, I don't go to Rocks for Wardogs, like that kind of thing. It's not that bad. Whereas like Rick goes off about Wardog, but Rick came off looking way worse in my opinion. Although I saw that Survivor Twitter had a poll on which team are you on, and people were voting for Rick, so...
Yeah, that
maybe I'm not getting what I'm supposed to get.
I would guess, yeah, Rick is still going to be, out of those two, the casual fans' preferred eventual winner or whatever. This is something you touched on earlier, and now it's come up again. Just the idea of Twitter and the Wardog, that is what is really holding me back from being higher on the Wardog being the eventual winner of this season, because it seems like a lot of the eventual winners don't fucking care what people on Twitter have to say, whereas Wardog's like blocking the entire world.
Well, I heard he unblocked some people, so maybe that's a good sign. Yeah, I find it very hard to take anybody seriously who takes Twitter that seriously. Like, it takes a lot for me to even consider blocking someone.
How many people have you blocked?
I don't know, not that many. I just blocked someone last week.
I think I've blocked like 3 or 4 people.
I just like a couple months ago unblocked everyone that I had blocked and was like, people can have a second chance.
How'd that go?
I mean, I don't think I had to reblock anyone. Maybe like 1 or 2 people that I had to remute.
All right. Olive branch. Works every time.
Yeah. Every single time it works.
Yeah. So the Wardog, I think, certainly going to be one of the most interesting people to be on the lookout for. Pretty much every week he's still in the game going forward. And I would say he may be the ultimate person for me this season, where no week is going to surprise me if people suddenly decide, hey, we got to get rid of the Wardog.
Yeah, Wardog, you could literally say anything is going to happen. You could tell me he was the first boot of a season. You could tell me he won. You could say pre-merge, merge, jury, whatever. And I'd be like, yeah, okay, I buy it. Like, I could buy him going anywhere.
Yeah. So definitely looking forward to seeing how all of that goes. Let's talk through a couple other of these people on this Lesu group with him. And we talked a little about Wentworth earlier and just your endeavors with her in the real world. But once again, we have Kelly Wentworth as an underdog in the post-merge with an idol in her back pocket. How do you feel like she's doing this time around?
I feel like she's doing well. Like, the fact that she hasn't played the idol yet indicates that there's a lot that they haven't shown us, because they show us to make it seem like, oh, is she going to play it? Is she not going to play it? Obviously, she's gotten some kind of reassurance that she doesn't need to, because she is... Like, it's very anxiety-inducing every single time that her and Lauren look at each other and they don't play it, right?
I'm completely with you that my takeaway as well was, oh, this is probably a much different story on the island than the story they are telling on TV if Wentworth and Lauren feel so secure they're not even considering playing their idols.
Yeah, exactly. But the way that they're putting it together makes me feel very anxious about it every single time. I'm so worried that maybe she'll like get overconfident with it and not play it when she needs it, and that's like my biggest fear this season. They've shown her to be the target a bunch, but she hasn't gone home, so I feel good about her, and I will continue to stan her forever.
Yeah. How about Lauren?
Lauren is a badass. Like, I just like, I want to be her best friend.
Yeah. Lauren's a huge standout this season, right? I don't know if the casuals are necessarily coming away with that yet, but it does seem to me like in the online community, Lauren has been immensely popular beyond what most people imagined.
I feel like after the fainting this week, the casual fans will come out with that impression, especially with Jeff Probst literally calling her a warrior.
That's true. Big week for Lauren. Fainting really does numbers, does wonders for your numbers.
Yeah, she's doing great, and she is so beautiful. I just needed to say that.
Hadn't noticed.
Yeah, I didn't think you had.
If it comes down to it, do you feel like Lauren could beat Wentworth in the end, or does she need to find a different person to sit next to?
I don't think she could do it sitting next to Wentworth. I think that would be a really tough case because their game has been so intertwined, and I just feel like Kelly has the experience to really explain it better.
And I guess let's also get into David Wright here, the other leftover from this Lesu tribe, who, for my money, has been playing really well despite finding himself in some unfortunate circumstances from time to time. It really does seem like for someone who like self-describes is just so anxious and neurotic and in his own head all the time, every single interaction it seems like David has had to this point has been really impressive to me. Like even the ones that are where he's hearing the exact opposite of what he's hoping to hear, he always maintains a, I don't mean like smile on his face, but like he always maintains a good facade that things are going well. I'm thinking back to the premiere episode when War Dog is telling Wendy, "All right, you leave so we can talk among privately without you." And David just kind of smiles and says, "All right, I guess this is what's happening now." And then also when Rick is yelling at him this episode, he's just kind of smiling, going, "I guess this is where I am now, and all I can do is try to play my best from here." It really seems like David's head is in the right place, even if his position is not the absolute best at this point. Although certainly rising after this last vote.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been really good socially, so we know to expect that. Like with the half idol thing this episode, when he's like, he's not just like, no, I'm keeping this. He's like, no, I'm gonna hang on to it for now if you don't mind, which is just like a very diplomatic way to state that. But I feel like he pushed so hard in the pre-merge for Kelly so many times. Like they showed him to be wrong so much. Like I feel like I don't think he's winning.
Yeah, that is a very good point. I don't know even where he would be on my winner ranking. What, I don't even know what my winner rankings would look like at this point, but he's certainly alive for me. It wouldn't blow me away at all to see David go on a kind of underdog run yet again, this and become the post-merge kind of kingpin the same way things played out for him in Millennials versus Gen X. But you are right. I feel like if David Wright did win, they would probably be really like slamming us in the face with it, right?
Yeah, I don't. I would think we would see him as like a true mastermind where everything is going his way. I don't think they would show it, with him having to kind of back down from what he wants so many times.
And my speculation had been during that pre-merge where he was talking so much about wanting Wentworth out. First of all, that may not have necessarily been his exact words, and that may have been some tricky editing or taken from later or whatever. But also, I think that may have been a storyline that was hit so hard because of an effort to potentially make it look like Wentworth's back was more up against the wall than it was.
Yeah, they have to set up Wentworth as an underdog, or people immediately think she's getting the villain edit.
Right. Okay. So there is David. I'm rolling through the. Is there anyone that I have skipped over to this point other than people potentially like Chris on Edge of Extinction or whatever, but in the main game that we haven't at least touched on a little bit?
No one that I feel like there's that much to say
Yeah, I should have
about.
written a list of everyone's name down or didn't do that. But,
I should have prepared a list, apparently.
well, I guess maybe we'll emerge. Maybe someone else will emerge as we talk through quickly. What do you think happens from this point now going forward? Is it in terms of this immediate next vote, now that Julia, Gavin, and Victoria have split away from Kama, do you think they now are just trying to roll with that Wentworth, Lauren, David, Wright, Wardog majority?
I mean,
Aurora,
like they,
I guess, should also be included in there for the for posterity.
Yes. I don't know. Like, and that's what's kind of exciting is that I truly just don't really know what's going to happen. I could see them trying to roll with that. I could also see like what you laid out earlier, where it kind of becomes two separate sides of common, the less it would become more of a swing vote. And I think that would be probably the most exciting thing that could happen.
Yeah. I feel like that would be probably my call entering this episode, that this Lesu group can probably take their pick of whatever comma they want to take out and get no shortage of people on board for that.
Exactly. Like they just, now that they've like truly fractured the comma group, then they have a lot more room to maneuver. And like Kelly and David together and with Wardog, like that's a lot of strategic power in those three, so I can't see them being complacent.
No, and I mean, it certainly doesn't seem like Lauren is any kind of slouch in that regard either. So I am really excited about the prospect of those four being in the middle for not even just this next episode, but hopefully a long time coming. Although, again, four people is a lot in this context of coming together to one decision everyone's super happy with, especially in a game this wide open. I could see a lot of fireworks going down, not just next round, but throughout the entirety of this mid-game and end-game. I think we have a really exciting group of people here left, and it could go tons of different ways. So really looking forward to next week, and of course just everything that I'm sure we're going to see play out this season until Joe comes back and ruins it. So Kirsten, give me, I guess, just while you're on the podcast record, your official winner pick for Edge of Extinction.
Oh no.
Oh yes. Texas Tech.
Oh yeah. Can I flip a coin? Unfortunately there's too many options for a coin. I'm going to say Lauren.
I like that call a lot. My big three right now that I think have emerged for me are Lauren, Wentworth, and the War Dog. Wentworth, War Dog, and Lore Dog, probably in that order. And maybe Aurora Dog could be in there.
I would love it if the Aurora Dog is a top winner contender, because then that's someone that I liked preseason.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have her at number four, but I
you just like, wanted the pun. We understand.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I guess also, while I have you on the record, I know it is disastrously late, but give me your real-time BB Can 7 winner pick.
Oh, God. It's hard. I guess I'll go with Anthony because everyone coming out is saying Anthony's playing the best game, but I just am hopeful that it's going to fall out from under him.
For whom are you rooting to win BB Can 7? Maybe that's an easier question to give an excited answer to.
No, literally no one. I don't care.
All right. Awesome stuff. Yeah. Hey, well, if people want to hear you talking about BB Can 7, it's not Kirsty Thursday, which breaks my heart. That is the most obvious thing to do in the world, Taryn Armstrong. Kirsty Thursday, it's all yours for free. But what day are you on this season?
Well, first of all, I work like a Monday to Friday job, so it's not Taryn's fault.
Quit your job. Kirsty Thursday demands your respect.
Well, Kirsty Thursday does not pay enough to be quitting my job over. So I've been doing Sundays this season over on RHAP. I will not be on this upcoming Sunday, which is probably good for me to get a little break from that. People can also hear me talk about Riverdale every week over on KowskiCast. That's Cow with a K. And then this is a big week for me. I'm going to be on the upcoming episode of Robin and Keepanita podcast this upcoming weekend.
Okay,
and then
so...
Yeah.
I'm about 20 minutes away from the wheel spin, but what are you talking about?
We'll be talking about Riverdale Season 3, Episode 7.
Oh, my God. Very exciting stuff.
It's truly a wild episode of television that everybody should watch.
Is that was it added specifically because it is an insane episode? Like, obviously they only do season 3, episode 7, but did you submit it because that specific episode was so crazy, or did you just submit Riverdale?
Yes. So Riverdale season 3 is currently airing. So after season 3, episode 7, which was in like October or whatever, I emailed Akiva and I said, Akiva, here are the general plot points of this episode. It is absolutely insane. You and Rob need to talk about it. He then reached out and said, well, would you be our Riverdale expert? And I was like, if you think you need an expert, like, sure. And then it became a whole thing where Riverdale almost got taken off the wheel, and then people took it as an affront to me. So it's been a long time coming for this to actually happen.
There
but it's
go.
Truly wild.
Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. I've pulled up the podcast now. I have it paused at 1 hour 50 minutes in, and I have 17 minutes left. So thank
I feel
you
like trash for spoiling it.
Come no, out. It's very exciting. I can't wait to listen to that. Kirsten, where can people find you on Twitter and Instagram and so forth?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Kirsten Said What, because I have that branding. So please follow me.
One of my favorite subplots of this podcast is that you and Casual Anna have become Instagram friends.
Yes, I love Casual Anna. She has the best Instagram stories. Her gym has a dog. It's the best. I'm excited to meet her.
Yeah, hey, you're going to meet her in, what is it, like 10 days, 9 days now at the time that we're recording this. You're going to be at the Live Know-It-Alls in Philly. I'll be there, and Casual Anna is going to be there, so that's very exciting.
I like how the headline is, you're going to meet Casual Anna, and not, you're going to finally meet Colin Stone after he ditched last time when
I
finally booked a trip.
I did not ditch. I never committed, so...
It seemed like you were pretty committed, but whatever. It's fine.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sorry for ditching last podcast house, but I'm hoping this one, we can make up for it.
It's okay. Thank you for having me. I'm sure this is a great olive branch right before you meet me, so it should be good.
All right. Excellent. Thank you guys so much for listening. I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. Dom will potentially be back next week. He's on Twitter at DomHRV. You can email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. And for anyone interested, we do weekly bonus episodes over at patreon.com/domandcolin, talking through classic CBS reality, wrapping up almost now on Survivor Fiji. So check that out one more time, patreon.com/domandcolin, if you want to get on board with that. We will talk to you next week. Take care, everybody.